You don't need to modify that, I was just getting out of the way.
Well, if changing it, it's the only advantage would be sidelines to reduce. Session for an hour and a half with the Supreme, all nitpicks on language.
On what should part the release of these?
Just to conform it as much as possible to his text, because he's got the problem that any major changes now have to go to the government. But then I read him a memorandum.
Did you get this year that he can revise that?
Yes, but the way they say it, what they want to say is to concentrate this year on working out an agreement rather than to concentrate on working out an agreement this year. I think the average reader, that's so elusive a point. I got it this year. The next thing is, he says he'll try to get them to change that word. If not, he has accepted, I've dictated, and I've got the record of the telephone conversation, so if they screw us, in which I dictated, I said, I'm reading to you a memorandum that I'm putting into the president's file, which I will hand you a copy for your information, in which I said, Dr. Kissinger proposed to Ambassador Dobrynin that we add a sentence indicating that the agreement and the understanding would be achieved simultaneously. Ambassador Dobrynin replied that on instructions of his government, he could state that such a sentence was unnecessary because it was fully covered and implicit in the whole text of the paragraph and was also covered in the public statement.
The public statement is what I think is most. They're agreeing to the public statement. I consider that part of the agreement.
Of course.
Yes.
Well, it's a Soviet government statement.
Soviet government statement.
I've now said it, but that's still agreeable to you for.
The fact that is a Soviet government statement answers my question, because that's an interpretation of the other.
Oh, yeah.
If they're going to nitpick that, we'll screw it.
Now, we have to do this precisely.
Exactly.
I said,
it's all right. That's right.
We'll do it at noon on Thursday, or will you prefer 11?
Okay.
Well, he'd slightly prefer noon because they have their big evening news at 7, and they want to have it the lead item on their radio.
Fine. Good. Noon is fine. Just let him have his own time, because we don't give a damn. Just so it's before 4 o'clock.
Be noon here, 7 o'clock Moscow, and it will be on the radio at 7 o'clock sharp in Moscow.
That gives us time. If I could just figure out a way to get figured out a way to handle the Rogers problem. I mean, the main point being is so that he knows that we've been up to this for a hell of a long time.
But that's the thing, Mr. President, that is essential to get across.
No.
Well, I can handle Smith, because I'll just tell
you. You'll convince him, too.
Well, I'll just show him the record.
Yeah.
In some detail. Well, we can put it on the basis that a lot of it was hypothetical.
It's just only a question of.
See, Rogers on this one has no great pride because he couldn't handle. Yeah. I mean, he's never pretended to know their subject. If this were the Middle East, he'd be right up a wall.
Of course, it doesn't involve just his field either. It involves the Defense Department as well.
That's right.
We had to negotiate because we had to negotiate with defense.
Well, one position you can take with Rogers is that you felt you could never do this and carry it if you had to do it through a big interdepartmental negotiation. If you didn't want to surface it until you knew that the Russians would fight it. He was gone for the 3 crucial weeks.
I have a sort of finesse with it, but I just say, look, I stick out what I will do. I think we'll place a call for him on Monday and say, look, we got a break in the salt thing.
Easier.
Started in January. But
I think it'd be easier on him and on you, perhaps, if you do it alone.
Oh, I would. I plan to.
Unless, I'd be glad to be there.
No,
but at least not with the others.
No. And I'll say we got the break in this thing, and he came in on the Monday afterwards and said he had a reply, and we negotiated
you could do is to say you sent a message to Kosygin a few months back. In which you just thinking out loud said that might be a way. Then the prelim came in just before he left for the Party Congress and asked whether he could put it to them as a formal proposition. And we said yes. Then he came back from it with a specific proposal. And
we worked it out while you were in Europe.
Exactly. And we didn't want to do it on the cable.
Bill probably isn't going to be. He isn't going to understand the enormous importance of the simultaneous thing. How this differs from the Smith proposition. That's my point.
No, I don't. He doesn't know the details of any of this.
But on the other hand, the Smith over there.
Oh, Thomas Roberts will and Mary Martha will, and most of the senators. They may not understand the difference, but they know we've made a big step forward. See, all the people who were saying there's no progress, whatever, Fulbright saying he has given up reading the newspapers on salt because they depress him so much, they'll have to say.
See, I don't want this to appear that the, was the Soviet author, has that been in the press?
No.
Well,
that's why we have to go next week.
That's good.
And we can prove, you see, what astonished Smith so much is that Semyonov came to him with a fully worked out proposal on something that we hadn't even asked for.
See, good, I do see Bob Murphy. I can't really see.
I talked to him this afternoon.
I'm over there without having any report to me.
After our talk this morning, Mr. President, I took the liberty of calling him and telling him you had read his report and how impressed you had been. And that you wanted to see him, and we'll have to set something up next week because he's coming down. So I've taken care of him.
You know, Lodge is really him. He sits there like a toad.
Yeah, he's true. He's true. And Neustadt is such a cheap guy. Here is the former Zacchio. It is a sad lot.
They're all basically. Bill handles himself well. Bill is one thing about him. He knows about not giving the game away or a compromise.
Yes.
Right.
He came around to that today.
Yeah, well, you can't. Jesus Christ, we can't.
Now, the funny thing about Bill is that his first instinct is soft. But once he really is in a fight, he's tough. He's not a soft guy. Yesterday, he was all right, but but once you had your instinct of throwing him into the fight,
always.
Once he was in there, I'm going to talk tonight to the board of directors of the Brookings Institution.
Oh, Christ. You know what they are? It's the Democratic National Committee.
Probably.
Oh, it is, yes.
But I thought it'd be useful for outsiders.
Sure. I'll talk to them. What are you talking about? NATO?
I'm talking about NATO. I'm talking about Vietnam. I can...
just as well to be just as affirmative as hell.
Well, if we get 50% of the things we've now got cooking, if we get Berlin and Seoul this summer, or this year, we can then go back and remind them of the linkage problem.
Oh, look, this salt does look like we damn near got salt, you know.
Well, then we do.
It will read that way, most people.
And the beauty is that we got 5 weeks where no one can contradict it. Because they will now recess and not reassemble until July 1st. And then if we've got the summit coming up, we got to get the Chinese thing looking. If that son of a bitch Abrams hadn't screwed us on Laos, we'd have everything this year. As it is, these Vietnamese are going through some gyration right now because if they wanted to kick me in the teeth,
the war would be over. If the war would be over, if we'd have won, if we'd have beaten
the Hawks. If Abrams had done what he was supposed to, we would be...
It really would
have. Oh, the war would have been over. If we had... But even as it is, see, if they simply want to turn down a meeting, Mr. President, for that, that they could do, that they've done several times to me before. So the fact that they don't reply at all and that Letuan is running around Moscow and Peking shows that they're in some kind of indecision. Now what they'll wind up with, we don't know. I told you that Radio Peking, in describing the demonstrations here, has deliberately stayed away from attacking you.
So I didn't think about the demonstrations or whatever they were. You remember with Johnson, during all the period he was in, they burned an effigy of Rachel and so forth. In my case, they are rotten, totally. It isn't nearly as personal.
No.
You notice,
that's right.
Part of it is they know them well, but it's not nearly as personal. You know, Johnson may have killed the poor son, as you know.
Well, but he also showed that he was vulnerable. Your great strength is that you make the impression that you're not, and it is true that you're not being shaken by these demonstrations.
Not that much. That's right. You know, he acted as if he were affected by them.
Right.
That he was afraid of them. They're going anonymously in places and so forth.
And then this self-pitying public statement.
What a terrible burden this office is. You know, that is something that I never...
It is a burden in the sense.
You don't say it though.
In the sense.
No man who sits in a high position ever says, "Geez, I got a tough job." You don't do that. Look at all the four people you know who have dreary lives. They got the tough jobs.
But you have the tremendous advantage over him that in foreign policy, also in domestic policy, but especially in foreign policy, you know exactly what you're doing. He was really totally confused between his instincts, which were all right, and his advisors and his ignorance. He really had no antennas at all. I dealt with him. When I brief him now, I haven't done it in a long time. With you, first of all, he's interested. Starts that way.
He doesn't listen, does he?
No, he doesn't really give a damn about the
focus.
He doesn't think along. He absorbs the information, but it isn't. What interests him is politics. When you talk about the Senate and how to get votes, that he loves, on that he's creative. On foreign policy, he's doing his job by listening to you. So he never had any ideas of his own. He never had a framework within which he could absorb it. When I first started working with you, for you, what impressed me so much, and I, at the Daily News, they quoted Emmett Hughes as my having made a derogatory comment about you before 68, which incidentally I hadn't made that way, but I, as you know, I had supported Rockefeller. And then they asked me to give my assessment now that I've worked with you. So I spoke about half an hour about you. I said, I told them that's the thing when I first started working for you that impressed me so much. Now I take it for granted. Was no matter what the country was that I mentioned, you had been there, you knew the people. All I had to do was say one sentence, and you knew what it meant. One didn't have to explain the basic situation. Kennedy, that wasn't true, incidentally. Kennedy didn't know any of the world leaders when he came in.
The state of Mansfield, so he disappoints me, frankly, full of this trick. It does show you that Mansfield basically is a unilateral disarmer and a pacifist.
And an isolationist.
He's an isolationist. He's a Montana isolationist. I know this. And these damn senators are going along because of they want to do the popular thing. Let's not kid ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
But I was very interested. I really pounced right on that where Vance said Muskie and Humphrey would vote before it. Bastards. And I was told they hold them to it now.
Either way, you're in good shape. I don't
survive.
I don't. But if it passes, the house turns it down. I think it's the way the votes have been going. The fact that it's even now, where last night it was 20 votes against it. Mr. President, I consider this a godsend. You were going to have to make a tough fight on something. It's a good thing they attacked the sacred cow of the foreign policy establishment. And this way you have a chance to lead them. We get a statement signed by all of them. And,
let her go, whatever they get out. I need to hear the statement. But we'll set that to do it again.